This gives the power to the government to force telecommunications companies to be able to monitor your content, first of all, look at your metadata, look at your location services, look at your browsing history, but most importantly, to potentially be able to shut you down without giving you a reason. In fact, they can even have a gag order on the telecommunications companies so that they're not even allowed to tell you why you've apparently been shut down by the government. But they do have that ability now.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, coming to you in early July of 2026, when our American brothers and sisters are off celebrating their hot dogs and beer and fireworks in their semi-Sasquatchennial whatever nonsense they're doing down there to celebrate the land of the free and the home of the brave. But of course, in my home and native land in Canada, we just saw Canada Day, where people get together to celebrate the foundation of the true North, strong and free. Or is that the fake North, weak and enslaved? Well, you might be forgiven for thinking that if you've seen some of the recent tyrannical legislation that's been passing through Canadian Parliament. And I know one person who has been keeping his eye on that legislation, so you don't have to, or so that you can too, I suppose, is Dan Dix of pressfortruth.ca. You know him from, at the very least, his many, many appearances on the Corbett Report in the past, but hopefully you know his independent reporting that he's been doing for nearly 20 years now. Dan Dix, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
It's my pleasure, James. Thanks for having me on once again.
Excellent. Well, I wanted to get you on today to highlight, unfortunately, not a happy conversation, but a conversation that needs to be had nonetheless about the latest dystopian nonsense taking place in Canada. And unfortunately, these days, I think that's a lot of the news that I'm seeing out of Canada. And some of your recent reports have very much underlined that. And I wanted to talk or start specifically today with a video that you just posted up on Bill C-8 is now law. Canada's warrantless surveillance nightmare explained. And for those who need the link and want to read it for themselves, I will link it up in the show notes. Bill C-8, an act respecting cybersecurity, amending the Telecommunications Act and making consequential amendments to other acts. Wow, what an exciting title, right? It really makes you want to dig in and start reading all of these legalese clauses. Of course, it doesn't, and that's exactly the intention. But thankfully, we have independent reporters like Dan, who is drilling down on these details. So Dan, tell us in plain English, what is C-8 about and what does it threaten to do to Canadians?
Well, this one goes back quite a ways, James. You can track this back. It's essentially a cybersecurity bill is what it's being, you know, painted as. But really, it's essentially an internet kill switch on you. You know, it's not going after cyber threats. It's going after anybody who goes against the status quo. They've been trying to push this thing, I would say, for over a decade, whether it be through various bills that got rejected over the years, and then they get rebranded like CISPA and ACTA and PIPA and SOPA and all these various bills that have been tabled. But you know, over time, certain politicians, certain civil liberty groups, people have just recognized some of the problems within them, and they've all been terminated. The latest iteration was Bill C-26, which was on the table last year, and we were raising the alarm about it, saying this is going to, you know, give the government the ability to force the telecommunication companies to shut you off if they choose to. But Parliament was prorogued. And essentially what that means is it was shut down. And when that happens, every bill that's on the table essentially gets trashed. They're totally squashed. So when Parliament starts up into a new session, anything that was currently on the bill has to be reintroduced. And so they ended up doing that and they changed it to Bill C-8 this time. And it seems to have just whisked its way through the Senate, through the House, all the way to royal assent about a week ago or so. And now it's officially law, or at least it will be very, very soon after receiving royal assent. So essentially what it amounts to is this gives the power to the government to force telecommunications companies, whether that's Rogers or Bell or Telus or whoever, you know, you're with, to be able to monitor your content, first of all. Look at your metadata, look at your location services, look at your browsing history. But most importantly, to potentially be able to shut you down without giving you a reason. In fact, they can even have a gag order on the telecommunication companies so that they're not even allowed to tell you why you've apparently been shut down by the government. But they do have that ability now. So really, there's been a battle for free speech, which comes in with Bill C-9, which we can talk about as well. But Bill C-8 is the infrastructure, the actual tech that's going to allow them to do it. And it just got whisked through like it's no big deal. You know, not a lot of people seem to even be putting up too much of a fuss right now. But the reality is now they can essentially flip the switch on you at any given moment based on not something you've done, but something you've said that maybe offends people. They can shut you off of the internet and essentially just shut you down. And that's obviously going to affect a lot of people's livelihoods if it happens to them. So scary times giving Big Brother that kind of power to be able to do this without any kind of judicial oversight. You can't take them to court. They don't even need a warrant. Like there was a time when, you know, if they wanted to do something like this, they would have to go through a judge. They would have to get a warrant. All of that has been squashed with this Bill C-8. And the kill switch is live, and it can be switched, flipped at just about any time on just about anybody.
I would highly suggest that interested and concerned Canadians and people around the world who want to discover and discover more about the coming digital dystopia actually follow the link from the show notes to go and read C-8 for themselves, or at least skim through it. I have done so myself, and I've got to say it's a lot of that legalese jargon of subsection 32/A/7 has been amended to add a period after the words "and" or whatever. It's all that kind of legalese nonsense, but they do have a handy dandy summary at the beginning. Part one amends the Telecommunications Act to add the promotion of the security of the Canadian telecommunications system as an objective of the Canadian telecommunications policy, and to authorize the Governor and Council and the Minister of Industry to direct telecommunications service providers to do anything or refrain from doing anything that is necessary to secure the Canadian telecommunications system. And just from that summary alone, I think you get the tenor of this. As you say, a secret decision. I won't even say secret court passing a secret order. No, it's really just a secret decision that is made by a minister and is rubber stamped. And as you say, they can even gag the telecom companies from telling you about it. So you can be depersoned from the internet, essentially, and from cyberspace generally, at the flip of a switch, at the whim of the Canadian government. And you might not even ever necessarily know exactly what happened, let alone be able to appeal it. What could possibly go wrong? And as you say, this has skated through. It received royal assent on June 15th. And I'm glad that I saw your video about it, because I've seen almost no coverage about it. Very little coverage anyway, even from the constitutional kind of civil liberties associations, etc., that you think would be talking about this. And that I know we're talking about this when it was getting ready to pass through. I haven't seen a lot of coverage of it after the fact. Why on earth do you think that is? Do you think Canadians have just become complacent to this at this point?
Well, I think they're kind of getting bombarded right now with all sorts of bills. It's almost, there's a new one every day. I mean, whether it's Bill C-8 or Bill C-9 or, you know, C-22, the Online Harms Act. I mean, it's almost getting to the point where it's hard to keep up with. Like, you know, if this is something that you're, you know, doing all the time, it, like, there's so many of them, it's like, holy cow. And especially with you got them all passing nearly at the same time. Like, I think C-8 was at around the 15th or the 16th, and then C-9 was, I believe, June 18th, I think. So that's just within a few days of each other. These major, major bills are getting passed. So, I mean, I hope that some of the civil liberties associations, some of the groups like the JCCF and others are going to step up to the plate and, you know, start raising awareness about, you know, what can be done about this, because certainly there are things you still can do. Just because they put pen to paper and made this officially law doesn't mean that, you have to alter your life necessarily. And that's one thing that I would strongly encourage people not do is to self-censor. I think that's what this type of thing might lead to. If people are out there going, well, if they have a kill switch based on something I might say, and my livelihood depends on, you know, the internet, then maybe I shouldn't say this, or maybe I shouldn't say that. And I would argue that's the exact opposite of what we need to do. You need to move forward with integrity. You need to move forward on principle. You got to be able to tell your children and your grandchildren that you stood up to Big Brother and you were unwavering. And, beyond that, you could do stuff technology wise. You can, use proper VPNs. You can use encrypted apps to the extent that they're still able to be used, and things of that nature. And then, of course, maybe getting off and getting away from your cell phone anyways is not such a bad idea. Get out in nature and take this opportunity to get back to how our grandparents used to live.
Exactly right. But of course, we don't want to simply cede cyberspace and all of the people on there to the government. And as you say, self-censorship is not the way to go. If you're going to go out and be taken down and taken off the internet by the government, might as well do so in a blaze of glory. But we would say that, wouldn't we, Dan? We're the thought criminals, the COVID thought criminals, who are willing to continue speaking out and getting our YouTube channels scrubbed. If that's what it took, and that was what it took in the COVID era. So you're right. I think it is a question. Look yourself in the mirror. What are you willing to censor yourself about? And personally, I'm not willing to self-censor, even if they're going to take me down off their controlled platforms. So I think that is some very important words for people to think about. And yes, there are always technological workarounds here and there and ways to skirt around the system, but I think we also have to confront the propaganda head on. But speaking of this bombardment of bad news, you raised the specter of Bill C-9, which, as you say, received royal assent just around the exact same time as C-8 and has gotten similarly not as much coverage as it should. Specifically, this is the Combating Hate Act, an act to amend the criminal code, hate propaganda, hate crime, and access to religious or cultural places, which may or may not sound innocuous enough, but as you point out in a recent video, it is not innocuous. You have this video up just recently, the $15,000 mission to firebomb synagogue that wasn't anti-Semitism. Break this down for us and tell us how it relates to the Bill C-9.
Well, as you said there from reading the bill, it essentially amends the criminal code to be able to add new charges for people who might, let's say, intimidate someone at a place of worship. It also adds new laws against using so-called hate symbols or terroristic symbols. And things of
which
that.
Which is anything they say it is, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. The definitions of hate are so vague that it's essentially going to come down to whatever the police officer or crown prosecutor or snowflake judge decides is going to be, hateful on that particular day. But what's important is what they took out of the criminal code. And that is the freedom and the rights for religious expression defenses. So for example, if you are, and this is where the Bible comes in to play, where it's a big part of the conversation, because there was a time, if you were reading from the book of Romans, or let's say the book of Leviticus, and you quote it saying, a man is not to lie with a man as he would with a woman. That is an abomination. Well, people used to say, well, that's hateful. You're being hateful. And you could then look at them and say, well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but, I have a protected right to, voice my religious beliefs. They've removed those protections so that you can no longer use your religious belief as a defense to quoting something so-called hateful like that, when really it's coming from a place of love. But now they've removed those protections, so they can now essentially go after anybody who's going against any kind of status quo. You're speaking out against maybe the pronoun mandates in Canada. You're going up against the alphabet rainbow army. You're, discussing any of these types of things. They can point the finger now, say that is hateful, and you have no religious defense anymore. And surprisingly, nobody even has to be harmed per se. You don't have to actually cause any harm to anybody. It's just that if it is perceived that your words, not what you do, again, what you say, and this could just be in a post or a meme or maybe a certain emoji that you posted, you know, in response to something. If that is perceived as something that could offend somebody and may lead to other people feeling hatred about it, then they could pull the trigger on you, throw you in jail, get you a fine. And that's where Bill C-8 ties in with this. So C-9 is about silencing your speech. C-8 is about, you know, the mechanisms for how to get that done. But with this recent case that I just talked about today, this has happened a few years ago, I think it was, where a kid firebombed a synagogue in Montreal. Well, it turns out that it had nothing to do with anti-Semitism, which is what that they blasted all over the news, which is why things like Bill C-9 can pass in the first place. It had nothing to do with that. Turns out the kid was just a troubled druggie. He was a drug addict, and somebody offered him $15,000 to firebomb the synagogue. Of course, none of the mainstream outlets are looking into just who was this mysterious person who coughed up 15 grand for this kid to do this. Obviously to fill his drug addiction needs, nothing to do with anti-Semitism. So in the video, I make the case that I think there's enough evidence to point to the fact that CSIS or a CSIS agent is most likely the culprit here as being involved in this, because time and time again, we've seen it in Canada, whether it was with John Nuttall and Amanda Cordy, the, you know, Canada Day bombing plot that was foiled. Turns out this was an RCMP setup. This was a CSIS informant setup. These guys weren't capable of doing this stuff. They didn't want to do it, but they were coerced into it and entrapped into doing so. And, you know, we saw it with the Toronto 18. There was a CSIS informant involved with the Toronto 18. We've seen it time and time again, the Via Rail terrorist plot that was foiled. We've seen it so many times that I'm looking at this one going, who's this guy who supplied $15,000 for this kid to do this? And isn't it interestingly convenient timing that this is happening in the midst of Bill C-9 being passed so that they can kind of say, look at the hate. This is the kind of stuff we're talking about, but they have to manufacture the hate in order to be able to get people to get behind this stuff. So that's pretty much what that one boils down to.
And I strongly suggest that people watch that video again. Of course, I'll link it up in the show notes if you need the link, but please do watch that video, because as you say, this is one data point in a long trail of these types of operations. And you've been covering it for years and years, all sorts of different operations. It's always a CSIS informant. It's always RCMP setting these people up in one way or another. So yes, highly suspicious case top to bottom. And as you say, the timing of it is extremely convenient for the narrative agenda setters. So as if that wasn't enough. So we have C-8, we have C-9. Well, there's also this other incredible BC Supreme Court ruling that you've talked about recently. So the video is Courts Just Killed Private Property Rights in Canada, Cowichan Aboriginal Title Ruling Explained. For those of us who have not been keeping on top of this Cowichan Aboriginal Title Ruling, what is this ruling? What did the BC Supreme Court just rule, and what does it mean for Canadians?
Okay, well, this one goes back quite a while. This is, I believe, is the longest running court case in Canadian history. It was consecutively going for 513 days, I believe. And it was late last year when the BC Supreme Court judge ruled that Aboriginal title essentially trumps your fee simple ownership, your deed. The fee simple ownership is the bedrock of private property in Canada. And this is a fundamental thing to any free society. And the Supreme Court essentially said that no, the Aboriginal claim of their title trumps yours. And it was done in Richmond, British Columbia, where massive swath of land, we're talking thousands of acres with industrial, you know, companies there, many private homes, all sorts of resources, the Cowichan tribe and an Aboriginal group have claimed that their title should trump current private property owners. So essentially, people are now scratching their heads, thinking that their deeds were rock solid, are now realizing that that's not necessarily the case. And so what just happened just the other day is that they were trying to, you know, get a seat at the table, at least, because all of this was done without any of the private property owners even being able to be involved in the court case whatsoever. So all they want to do is like have their say. And the judge said, no, that you're not going to get the right to do that. The only thing you can do is maybe appeal. But we've already seen Aboriginal claims being made in other places like Nova Scotia and Quebec. And we've already seen some of these appeals being rejected for people in Nova Scotia, for example, who are trying to appeal this stuff. So the avenue that she's suggesting that people go is shaky. And essentially, we're in a place of limbo where anybody's private property now, not just in British Columbia, but all across the country, is potentially up for grabs if they file another new claim sometime in the near future. And we're talking about something that they suggest happened decades, maybe even centuries ago, that they can now say your right to private property is trumped, our rights trump yours. And a judge has ruled in favor of them. Again, it's absolutely shocking that the fundamental freedoms of what makes us, you know, a free society, private property, has just been totally ripped to shreds.
Yeah. I mean, as you point out, it fundamentally destabilizes the very fabric of society itself and the way that the entire Canadian system has worked up to this point. And yeah, I mean, it's a pretty remarkable case. And I can tell you from the international perspective, it's receiving basically no international attention that I've seen. So interesting. I guess it depends on how this plays out. But as you say, it will depend on what other claims are made in the future on using this, obviously, as a precedent. And one can only imagine that a lot of different tribes are going to be looking at the ability to use this in their own localities. And it's going to become something that will undoubtedly be an issue in Canada going forward.
And not just Canada, you know, this is ultimately coming from the United Nations and things like UNDRIP, you know, the United Nations Declaration.
Yes. For people who don't know about UNDRIP, can you tell people about that?
It's just the United Nations Declaration of Indigenous Peoples and this idea that, basically what we're seeing play out in Canada right now. It's almost like the Canadian private property Aboriginal title claim is kind of the first trial of this. And they're just going for it. And so it does seem like it's a Canadian issue, but really this is something that could potentially happen anywhere all across the globe, where they will use the excuse of reconciliation. In order to right the wrongs of the past, we're going to have to just take your land away and give it back to the original people who claimed it. Again, even if we're talking about something that happened centuries ago, so it's a Canadian issue for now, but this is something that certainly could and probably will spread globally.
Well, I'll definitely be keeping my eye on it. I'll definitely be keeping my eye on your work because I know you'll be covering this as it continues to go forward. And Dan, we're looking at a cavalcade of catastrophe when it comes to Canada right now and all of this nonsense, legislative and court-wise and otherwise. So give me something good. What is there any bright spots on the horizon coming from Canada these days?
I mean, things are looking pretty bleak when you look at, because of who's recently in charge, you know, this Bilderberg insider, WEF puppet, globalist bankster, Mark Carney, who is, you know, being installed, was essentially, you know, placed in this position because he was nominated for the Liberal leadership right at the time when all of a sudden Justin Trudeau is resigning and we got to put somebody else in there, and then he becomes prime minister. Funny how that works, you know. And this is the same guy who's coming from a globalist Bilderberg WEF bankster background. So when you're thinking about where the country is heading from that perspective, it's not looking too good. you know, it's not looking too good. But honestly, I don't allow this stuff to ruffle my feathers. I don't get all too upset about it. I, you know, see these things as an opportunity to continue to practice what I preach and preach what people need to do, which is don't be reliant on these guys. Don't rely on the governments anymore. Don't rely on the banks anymore. Whether that means you have to get out of debt, maybe you have to own something a little smaller than, you know, you got to downgrade a little bit. And don't rely on the grocery stores either. We're really moving into a time of just an unprecedented time where becoming the number one enemy of the state, which is a fully self-sustainable, free, sovereign human being, is going to have to be our focus moving forward. So I wouldn't get too up in arms about what they're doing, and maybe just focus on building that community with your friends and neighbors. Make friends with some farmers, buy local, and just, like I said earlier, get back to the point of living like our grandparents used to live, because that's where this thing is heading. You know what I mean? And we have to really kind of, you know, like we said, there's ways of fighting it, but there's also ways of, you know, enjoying your life and your family and your friends, and making sure you can take care of yourself independently. So I think that should be most people's focus moving forward. Of course, I'm going to continue to expose these bills and the legislation as they come. But I think in the grand scheme of things, people really need to get back to nature, and they need to network with like-minded individuals. And that's probably the answer moving forward.
Words of wisdom right there, Dan. Yes, if there is good news to be had, it won't be found in the news feeds. It will be found around you with the people that you are building community with. That is the good news that is not ever going to make it onto the front page of the newspaper, and for reasons. All right, excellent. Well, as I say, I hope people are following your work, but if they are not, what are the ways that people can follow and or support your work?
Well, pressfortruth.ca is the best place to go. At the top of the website, you'll see links for some of the various video platforms that I do post on, whether that be Rumble or BitChute or Odyssey, are some of my go-to ones. I do post to YouTube again. I've been reinstated there, but you know, we don't know what's going to happen with that. So I'd strongly recommend people follow me on those other platforms. But pressfortruth.ca is the best place to go, where you can find all my work. And also, if you really must, you can follow me on YouTube as well. 2 days from now, I'm coming up on my 20th anniversary of starting the channel. So that's youtube.com/weavingspider. But pressfortruth.ca is the best place to go.
And let me put in a plug for pressfortruth.ca/feed. Which is actually the way that I follow your work, because once again, RSS trumps all of that social media middleman garbage, but what do I know? Anyway, Dan Dix, thank you for doing what you do. I appreciate your work as always and look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Absolutely, James. Thanks for having me.
The deep state. False flags. 9/11 truth. The Federal Reserve. Secret wars and hidden histories. Fake news. Medical martial law. Ceaseless propaganda. James Corbett. Reportage. Essays on the New World Order. Available where books are sold. Until they're not.
Reportagebook.com.